almost everything that Barack Hussein Obama said last night was a lie. And we're going to continue to cover his speech. I'm going to share three additional paragraphs with you, and then we're going to take a long break. Because what I'm going to do is read from the Islamic scriptural sources to demonstrate that he is a liar. He continued. He said, still, after all of these great efforts now of the military, which all it did was make bad situations worse. And all I can go down through, and I'd be happy to talk to any general about this. We broke Iraq. We broke Afghanistan. We didn't break Iraq once. We broke it twice. Afghanistan. We didn't break it once. We broke it twice. We made bad situations worse in both countries. We made a bad situation much worse in Libya. We made a bad situation worse in Egypt, and we have been the principal mover and shaker, making a bad situation infinitely worse in Syria. Our military did not make us safer. It made us more vulnerable. This president did not make the nation safer. He made the entire world more at risk. Still, we face a terrorist threat. No, we don't. We face an Islamic threat. We face an economic threat. We face an academic threat. We face an academic threat because we're educating unthinking individuals who react but do not process information intelligently, rationally. They have been duped by political correctness. We have an economic threat because we're bankrupt. We are nearly $18 trillion in debt, plus the unfunded mandates of another $40 trillion. America is simply playing a shell game with quantitative easing to create the illusion that the nation is solvent. We are under threat of Islam. Muslims hate all non-Muslims, and America is ground zero for their hatred. The only country that Muslims hate more than the United States is Israel. But we're not under a terrorist threat. Terrorism is simply a tactic. The greatest terrorist nation in modern history is the United States. No nation has killed more people in terrorist acts than the United States. The Civil War was won because America perpetrated terrorist tactics. That was the purpose of Sherman's March to the Sea. The North could not successfully defeat nor occupy the South, so they made continuing to fight for independence in the South impossible. It was a terrorist act. America won the war in Europe, fighting a terrorist attack, firebombing German cities, making it impossible for the Germans to continue to perpetrate the war, killing as many as 50,000 women and children in a single bombing mission at night. America finally broke the Japanese will to fight by firebombing and nuclear attacking. Japanese military facilities, but instead civilian communities, towns, villages, cities, firebombing them, white phosphorus, women and children, old men, burning to death each night. When the United States rains down its drone missiles, it's using a terrorist tactic. That's who we are now. We are the terrorist threat. We do not face one. He went on to say, we can't erase every trace of evil from the world, and small groups of killers have the capacity to do great harm. Well, the fact is that Islam is not a small group. It represents 1.3 billion people. And they are not the only evil. If evil were a sponge from the earth, we'd be back to similar days to Noah, where 8 people would survive in an entire region. I would suspect today that if those considered evil in Yahweh's eyes were a sponge from the earth, there would be some 7,000 people left. He said that was the case before 9/11. Well, 9/11 was an Islamic terrorism suicide bombing. And it remains true today. And that's why we must remain vigilant as all threats emerge. And yet the United States is the sole reason the Islamic State exists. The Islamic State exists solely because the United States deposed Saddam Hussein and invaded Iraq. And the Islamic State grew only because the United States built a military of Shiites to oppress the Sunnis. And so they gained popularity among Sunnis in Iraq. We gave the Islamic State muscle because the United States provided weapons to the Sunni warlords, who are now the backbone of the Islamic State, during Petraeus' awakening program. And then when members of the Islamic State in Iraq and the awakening program used their weapons in Syria, they were rewarded with vastly more weapons and vastly more powerful weapons, directly and indirectly, by the United States, using proxies like Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And they became a formidable fighting force in Syria against Assad, and then ignored the border and came right back into Iraq. The fact is that we weren't vigilant. The Islamic State exists because we created them. It's our fault. It was the stupidity of invading and bombing Iraq. It was the stupidity of arming fundamentalist Muslims, hoping that somehow you will be able to control them. He went on to say, at this moment, the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa, where radical groups exploit grievances for their own gain. Well, the reason that the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa is because the Middle East and North Africa are approximately 97% Islamic. He could have said, the greatest threats come from Islam. Yes, you've got, and it's not just, by the way, in North Africa now, because it's not just Egypt and Somalia and the Sudan, which pushes it further south into Africa. It's not just what's going on now in Kenya and Ethiopia with Islamic invasions. It's not just the chaos that America created in Libya and the Ennahda party controlling Tunisia. It's that the weapons that America provided for Libya are being wielded by the likes of Boko Haram. They're being wielded in the Central African Republic. They're being wielded in Mali. And it has created unbelievable carnage, rape, torture, kidnapping. All because of what the United States did. But then as you move through the world of Gaza, where America is the largest funder of the fundamentalist Islamic terrorist group called Hamas, and then through the rest of the Middle East, where all you have is Islamic thugs. And America is the largest supplier of weaponry to those thugs. That's why the threat of Islam from the Middle East and North Africa is so great. There are no radical groups there. They're fundamentalist groups. and he knows it. They're Salafist Muslims. Salafist Muslims mean they're a fundamentalist Muslim. That's why this is an Islamic Reformation. He then says one of those groups is ISIL, which calls itself the Islamic State. There is no one in the world referring to them as ISIL other than this ignoramus, the abominator. They were the Islamic State in Iraq. That's how they emerged. They emerged there to create jihadist opportunities against two foes. The invading crusaders, that would be the United States, and the Shia Muslims, who they also view as infidels. They took the chaos that ensued following the deposition of Saddam Hussein to create an Islamic militant organization for the express purpose of attacking Shia Muslims and Americans. They had no association of any kind with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda had no presence of any kind in Iraq prior to the U.S. invasion. That's a fact. And they grew because America stupidly thought that if we armed the Sunni warlords that they would go fight the Islamic State when in fact they joined them. And it was predictable. It was obvious they were going to do so. I predicted it nearly a decade ago when the program was first announced. And then we armed them again in Syria. But they have never been the ISIL. Once they became heavily armed in Syria and were fighting both as suicide bombers in Iraq and as a militant group and a militia group in Syria, where in Syria they were not using terrorist tactics. They were fighting against the Assad government forces. They were a militia, not a terrorist group in Syria. They became known as the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Pretty simple. And now they're simply the Islamic State because there is no border between these countries. They have established their own state. They are not ISIL. They have never been ISIL. We'll be back in a moment. So this is where the abominator went radically south. He said, at this moment, the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa. But, of course, he's not willing to admit that the reason is because the Middle East and North Africa are 97% Islamic. Where radical groups, and they're not, they're fundamentalist groups, and the difference is night and day. If you're one of those in the media who uses radical before Islamic, as opposed to just Islamic or fundamentalist Islamic, then you are no better than this liar who exploit grievances for their own gain. No, they don't do it for their own gain. They do it for Allah, for Islam. All of them do it for Allah and for Islam, not for themselves. And one of those groups is ISIL. There is no ISIL, never has been, never will be, which calls itself the Islamic State. Then he said, now, let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. I told you he was going to say that. I told you that would be an important aspect of his speech, was denying any association between the Islamic State and Islam. Let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. They couldn't be more Islamic if every fiber of their body were devoted to it. They live the Quran. They cite the Quran. They follow Muhammad's example. They live and die for Allah. They exist to impose Sharia law, to establish a pure Islamic state. That is who they are. That is why they exist. Sure, Islam is corrupt. Yes, Islam is a pile of lies. Yes, Islam is a declaration of war against all humankind. Certainly, Islam is a terrorist manifesto. Yes, Muhammad was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. That is all true. But there is no purer incarnation of Islam on earth today than the Islamic State. Rather than they are not Islamic, that's all they are. They're exclusively Islamic. The president's statement is the antithesis of the truth on the single most important issue before us. You know, it's one thing to be misguided. It's one thing to mislead. It's one thing to play in the area of gray. That's what politicians love to do. To propose counterfeits, to try to twist and corrupt perceptions. Have a little revisionist history to create an artificial understanding. But this is the antithesis of truth. This is black against white. You could not be more dishonest than to say that the Islamic State is not Islamic. Then he went on to say, no religion condones killing of innocents, and the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslims. Why the vast majority of the Islamic State victims have been Muslims, that's always been true with Islam. And I'm going to devote program after program after program to reading from the Islamic Quran and Hadith to demonstrate conclusively that the President of the United States lied. That the Islamic State is, in fact, following Muhammad's example. And that killing of innocents is the focus of Islam. That everything this man said is untrue. Hello, Glenn. Welcome today to Shattering Myths. I hate to revel in prophetic accuracy, but boy, I nailed this one.
Well, I like that character in Jurassic Park says, "Boy, I hate being right all the time."
Now you notice I didn't go there because I'm one who is always willing to acknowledge my mistakes and to correct them, willingly and eager to do so. But everything I said this man was going to say and do, he said and did.
I'll help you with that as much as I can. I can just picture one Islamic State recruit saying to the other, "Hey, what's a Levant? I don't know. You know what? Hey, ask Abdullah. He went to school. What's a Levant?
What's a Levant? What's an ISIL?" I mean, he won't even call him ISIS. I mean, because of course ISIS sounds kind of nice, and it's a pagan goddess. So he won't even use ISIS. But he wants to use ISIL. There is no ISIL. What the hell? Come on, Abdullah. What's an ISIL? He went on to say that, and I'm going to devote, by the way, all the time necessary to prove that the President of the United States is a pathological liar when he says that ISIL is not Islamic and that no religion condones the killing of innocents. We're going to prove that that is untrue, because it's the heart of the issue. He went on to say that ISIL certainly is not a state. Well, first of all, there is no ISIL. And they are as much a state as many states around the world. They have a functioning economy. They have a functioning capacity to manage communities, and doing so, they keep the markets full of food. They keep the electricity on. They do a better job of these things than Assad did, and better job than is being done in today's Iraq, the post-American destruction of Iraq. They have their own military. They have a justice system. The justice system is unjust. The military is ruthless. But they have all those things in place. They do everything that a state does. So let's not kid ourselves. Then he says it was formerly Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq. No, it wasn't. There is no association ever between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, much less Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. Ever. This is a lie that is causing people to make stupid decisions. It has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda and everything to do with Islam. But this president wants you to believe the inverse of what's true. And it has taken advantage of sectarian strife and Syria's civil war to gain territory on both sides of the Iraq-Syrian border. Well, that sectarian strife is Islamic strife. It's between Sunni and Shia Islam. The civil war in Syria is between Sunni and Shia Islam. The civil war now taking place in Iraq is between Sunni and Shia Islam. And the reason that Sunnis and Shias are killing each other in record numbers is because America invaded Iraq, which was ruled by a Sunni dictator, and gave Iraq to Iran, which is controlled by Shia dictators, fundamentally changing the balance of power in this area. The Islamic State arose because America was stupid. Tell the truth. If you're going to go to war, if you're going to arm people with weapons of war, do so based on the truth as opposed to a pile of lies. It is recognized by no government and nor by the people it subjugates, which is also not true. ISIL is a terrorist organization, pure and simple. No. Well, it uses terrorism as a tactic. So does the United States. It is an Islamic organization, pure and simple. Terrorism is one of the tools in Muhammad's quiver and thus in jihadist applications. And it has no vision other than to slaughter all who stand in its way. That's also not true. While they are murderous, they're less murderous than many Islamic militant organizations. We suppose that they may have killed thousands of people. But we really don't have any figures on the number they've killed. We have no accurate assessment. And they don't kill everyone who stands in the way. Moreover, their vision is pure. It is simple. It is disclosed. It is unquestioned. Their vision isn't to slaughter. Their vision is to establish an Islamic caliphate. Their vision is to do what the Quran and Hadith inspire them to do. Their vision is to establish Sharia law. Their vision is to put Allah in charge of all earth. That's their vision. They're clear. They're unambiguous. In a region that has known much bloodshed, one second, Glenn, in a region that has known much bloodshed, these terrorists are unique in their brutality. No, they're not. They're no different than most of the Islamic jihadists around the world. They execute captured prisoners, as do most jihadists. They kill children, as do most jihadists. They enslave, rape, and force women into marriage, as do most Muslims. They threaten a religious minority with genocide, as does Islam. And in acts of barbarism, they took the lives of two American journalists, Jim Foley and Stephen Sotloff. We don't know that to be true. Now, they may be dead, but they certainly weren't killed in those videos. And killing of two American journalists who chose to be there is not a justification for war. The Islamic State is no different than any other of the thousands of Islamic jihadist groups around the world. And their behavior is all directed by the Quran and Hadith, and we're going to share that in a moment. Yes, Glenn.
Well, a couple things. Number one, the notion that religions aren't violent towards innocents is so pathetically, historically ignorant.
Of course.
You know, that it's a uniquely American civil religious idea that was inculcated by the strong Christian influence in America, you know, because Christianity is primarily, you know, benevolent in character.
Yes, but,
should be.
But you look at what the Christians in America inspired in terms of the savagery of what America did in the Civil War.
I'm talking about what the doctrine is. Okay, like the violence is inherent to the doctrine in Islam. But to say that religion in general is not violent towards innocence, all you have to do is watch Mel Gibson's Apocalypto, you know, Olmec's, you know, Mayans, Toltecs,
of course.
You know, all that kind
The Incas, the Mayas, the Aztecs here in the Americas. Right. Look at the Spartans. You look at the Greeks. I mean, when you actually consider the behavior of Alexander and his father Philip, they were savages.
Right.
And you look at Rome and the way that Romans treated the rest of the world and brutalized innocents. This religious environment that was Rome was savage, as was Babylon, as was Assyria, as was Egypt. It has always been the nature of religions to savage the innocents.
It's only a naive American civil religious notion that, you know, religions all just want to have different people with different ideas agreeing to disagree and going to different buildings on certain days, and then nobody bothers anybody, and we all just engage in commerce and socialize during the week, you know. That's how it really works.
It's part of this political correctness that has indoctrinated generations of people in the West to stop being rational. To ignore history.
The facts
of history show that what he said is absolutely untrue. Rather than no religion, all religions have sought to slaughter innocents. All of them.
Right. Right.
You know, you look at the original documents that came out of politicized Christianity. As Christianity was becoming a religion around the time of Constantine. Because prior to then, there really was no religion of Christianity. When it materialized as a religion, I would encourage our listeners to go to yadayah.com and then go to the seventh volume and read the second installment on Rome. And consider what the leaders of the Christian church had to say about killing, slaughtering Jewish women and children. I want you to read that and know that Christianity was born in rage and hatred and carnage. And then I would like you to consider the speech when Senator Cruz, the Texas senator, was giving a speech to Christians from the Middle East and talked favorably about Israel, about rioted. Christianity was born out of this hatred of innocence, of Jews.
In the 20th century, you have this liberalization, nominalization, utter emasculation of the culture, subcultures,
right.
You know,
right.
In America. So you have this low testosterone group of sheeple, don't want to offend anybody. Yeah, and it's like, just because your notion of religion is pathetically wimpy doesn't mean that's the way it is in history or throughout the rest of the world.
Right. Yeah, it's total ignorance of the facts of history in terms of the nature of religion, the consequence of religion, and all religion. I mean, just look at the Hindus. They're supposed to be passive. And look what they're doing to little girls. If a little girl won't submit to their total authority, so that they can sell her as she's a piece of meat to be ravaged by some man for money, they then strip her naked, they torture her, they rape her, and then they hang her from a tree.
You said Hindus. I think you meant Muslims. Huh?
No, Hindus in India.
Hindus
in India. Oh, yeah. It's catastrophic what they're doing now in India. It's across the board. In religion.
Right.
Now, Islam happens to be the only religion that in the modern era that was born out of a declaration of war. Now, it's true that the Spartan religion and the war machine were unified. The Roman religion and their war prowess were unified. The Babylonian, the Assyrian, and the Egyptian religions and their militancy, their war capability, were one and the same. They were literally the same. The religion was the motivation for the military and for the conquest and for the political leaders who were also generals. And so that is the history of the world. Religion has always been violent. It has always ravaged innocence.
Right. And so it's like pathetically naive to say that, this is this notion that this Rodney King, can't we all just get along here? The notion is like a pathetically ignorant American
culture. And it's part of the national religion of political correctness is what causes so many people to embrace outright lies. It's just a completely ignorant and irrational, immoral stance. Because when you take that stance, when you pretend that religions do not wish to destroy innocence, then what you do is you make the innocent vastly more vulnerable. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Everything the man said is untrue. Everything. And what I want to do at this point is I want to devote a number of shows to proving that point. Now, it's true, and we have outlined this in our discussions with Glenn, that every religion has sought and has condoned the killing of innocents. It's just none worse than Islam. It's how Christianity was born. And don't think for a moment that Christianity was conceived by a Jesus Christ. It wasn't. Christianity was conceived by Paul. And Paul began his life as a murderer, by his own admission. As the fact, Paul sought out to kill innocents. And he's the founder of the Christian religion. He's the author of half of the Christian New Testament. There's no part of the Christian New Testament that was written by a Jesus Christ, even if you knew what his name was. The fact is that all religions are bloody killers. It's just that Islam, unlike other religions, was born in blood. It was born to kill. In Islam, there is no reason to live, only to die. It has always been the case in Islam. And I'm going to prove that to you. And I'm also going to demonstrate that the most ruthless, deadly, destructive behavior of the Islamic State is in absolute harmony with the Quran and Hadith. Now that the Prophet of Doom site is back up, and it's prophetofdoom.net, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, of Doom, D-O-O-M.net is back up. You can read all of this for yourself. It's 1,000 pages that analyze the oldest Islamic sources. But I'm going to introduce these citations from the Muhammad's Own Words appendix of Prophet of Doom, just as I introduced them over a decade ago. Prophet of Doom provides a comprehensive, contextual, and chronological review of the Islamic scriptural sources, starting with the religion's rendition of creation and ending with the terror it inspired. The book brings Islam's five earliest and most trusted sources together, putting their words and deeds into the context of time and place, to expose what the dogma's founder had to say about himself, his ambition, his religion, and his God. There is no better way to understand Muhammad, Allah, or Islam, or to evaluate their legacy, which is today the Islamic State. When reviewing the primary papers of any dogma, of any religion, we must be mindful that context comes in three forms. There is the context of historical chronology, that of circumstance, place, people, and time. there is a context of adjacency, the proximity of related words and thoughts within the writings themselves. And context can be topical. In this case, similar themes can be brought together and organized by subject. All three forms of context provide clarity. Unfortunately, the Quran fails its faithful on all three counts. The book lacks any semblance of chronology. It is a jumbled mess with absolutely no chronological order to it. It is wholly deficient when it comes to providing the required context of people, place, and time. Adjacent verses are usually unrelated and often contradictory. In the Meccan surahs, there is a preoccupation with railing against Muhammad's mockers, his neighbors, those who knew him best, and with describing Allah's torments. But the rejections and condemnations are strewn haphazardly throughout the text. This is also true of the Medina surahs and their fixation on submit and obey, on perform and pay, on fight or burn. Yes, these are themes, and yes, they are repetitive, but they are not presented in a cohesive grouping. The Quran's failures in this regard dictate Prophet of Doom's length, its order, and its format. The narrative and the chronological hadith compiled by Ishaq and Tabari were required to provide the Quran with the context of circumstance, time, and place that it otherwise lacks. We'll be back.